All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a look at a case that is pretty foundational for law students and anyone interested in federal law, United States v. Sheridan. It's from 1946, and it might seem kind of simple on the surface. We're talking about cashing a check, but it really gets into, you know, all these really complex questions about federal criminal law, and where state jurisdiction ends and federal jurisdiction begins.
Yeah, it's a really interesting case. You know, it really shows you just how complicated things can get when you're dealing with, like, the intersection of state and federal authority.
Right, and for our listeners who are law students out there, this is definitely one you want to keep in your back pocket. Yeah. You know, it's not just about knowing the facts of the case. It's about really understanding how federal criminal procedure works and, you know, how to interpret statutes.
Absolutely.
So let's jump right in. Okay. So Sheridan revolves around the National Stolen Property Act. That's the NSPA.
Yeah.
And so what's the key provision here that we need to understand?
Well, the really important part of this case is Section 3 of the NSPA. And that part basically says that it's illegal to transport or to cause the transportation of forged securities across state lines, you know, if you're trying to defraud someone.
Right.
And, that little word causing, that's where things get really interesting in Sheridan. I mean, what does it actually mean to cause something to be transported across state lines, right? That's what the court had to figure out.
Yeah, that's a really tricky question. And I think, you know, that's where this case gets so interesting. So let's set the scene here. What actually happened in Sheridan? You know, what did he do to get into trouble with the law?
Okay, so basically what happened was Sheridan cashed 3 forged checks in Michigan, and the checks were drawn on a bank in Missouri. So, you know, kind of the normal way that banks work is the bank in Michigan, where he cashed the checks, they'd send the checks back to the bank in Missouri to get their money right. And it was during that process, when the checks were being sent back and forth between states, that they realized, wait a minute, these checks are forged.
Oh, wow. So the actual discovery happened during, like, the routine interbank process.
Okay.
Okay, so then what? What happened to Sheridan?
Right. So at first he was found guilty in the trial court, you know, seemed pretty open and shut. But then the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, they actually overturned his conviction. And the reasoning there was that Sheridan himself didn't actually take the checks across state lines. He didn't, like, mail them or anything like that. It was the banks that did that as part of their normal procedures. And the Sixth Circuit said that, well, since he didn't personally transport the checks across state lines, he couldn't be found guilty under the NSPA.
Okay, so that makes sense, I guess. But then how did it end up at the Supreme Court?
Well, yeah, I mean, it kind of created this legal conflict, right? You had one court saying he's guilty, another saying he's not. So naturally, the case went up to the Supreme Court to sort it all out. They had to decide, okay, does cashing a forged check, knowing it'll go through this interstate banking process, does that count as causing it to be transported under the NSPA?
All right, so this is, like, the big question, right? And the Supreme Court ultimately decided that Sheridan was liable under the NSPA, right?
Yeah, they did. They reversed the Sixth Circuit's decision.
Okay, and, like, what was their thinking?
Basically, the Supreme Court said that, look, when Sheridan cashed those checks, he knew, or should have known, that they would have to be sent back to Missouri as part of the normal banking process. So even though he didn't personally transport them, his actions set off a chain of events that predictably led to that interstate transportation.
Okay, so they're saying it was foreseeable that the checks would cross state lines. So it wasn't just like a random possibility. It was basically guaranteed to happen as part of the system, right?
Exactly. And that's where the concept of foreseeability becomes really important in this case. Justice Rutledge wrote the majority opinion, and he emphasized this idea that Sheridan had to have known what would happen when he cashed those checks. He knew they would have to go back to Missouri, and that meant they would be transported across state lines.
Okay, so the idea of foreseeability was, like, a major part of their reasoning. Were there any other factors that influenced the Supreme Court's decision?
Yeah, there was another really important element to their decision. They looked at the congressional intent behind the NSPA. I mean, why did Congress pass this law in the first place? They basically said that Congress wanted to help states go after criminals who were using interstate commerce to get away with their crimes. So even if Michigan could have prosecuted Sheridan for forgery, the federal government also had an interest in the case because his actions involved interstate commerce. They even quoted from legislative history saying, Congress contemplated coming to the aid of the states in detecting criminals who utilize interstate commerce to make a successful getaway.
Right. That makes sense. Especially back then, it would have been way easier to like slip across state lines and escape justice.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So they're really focusing on like the purpose of the law in preventing criminals from exploiting these interstate systems.
Yeah.
But didn't the Supreme Court have to address like a previous case that seemed kind of similar? Kahn v. U.S.?
Oh, absolutely. They actually distinguished Sheridan from Kahn. You see, in Kahn, the court had said that if someone transports checks across state lines after they've already completed a fraud, that doesn't fall under the NSPA. Because in that case, the fraud was already done. The interstate transport was just an afterthought. But in Sheridan, the court said that the interstate transport was a crucial part of the fraud itself. It wasn't just something that happened afterwards. It was an essential part of how Sheridan was trying to get away with his scheme.
So a really subtle distinction. So in Kahn, the interstate transport was basically irrelevant to the fraud, whereas in Sheridan, it was like a key part of the whole plan.
Okay, I see the difference. But, you know, it's worth pointing out that not everyone on the Supreme Court agreed with this decision, right? Yeah, you're right. Chief Justice Vinson and Justice Douglas, they dissented in this case. They were worried that the majority opinion was giving the federal government way too much power over what they saw as like normal state level financial transactions. They argued that just because banks routinely send checks back and forth across state lines, that shouldn't automatically mean that every single case of check fraud becomes a federal crime. They were concerned about like federal overreach.
Yeah, I can see their point. It does seem like it could potentially open the door for the feds to get involved.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases that might have traditionally been handled by the states. So, like, even if they agreed that Sheridan was guilty of something, they were worried about the bigger implications of this decision. So what ultimately was the test that the court established to determine if someone's liable under NSPA Section 3?
Right. The court laid out a two-part test. First, did the defendant cause the interstate transport of forged securities? And second, did they do it with the intent to defraud? So you have to prove both of those things. And the court was really clear that you don't have to prove that the person like specifically intended to use interstate commerce to commit fraud. As long as they had the intent to defraud and they caused the interstate transport, that's enough.
Okay, so it sounds like Sheridan had some pretty big implications for how we understand federal criminal law, especially when it comes to fraud. Like, it broadened the reach of federal jurisdiction, right? So for our law students listening out there, what are the main takeaways from United States v. Sheridan?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that federal law can apply to seemingly local actions, especially when those actions are connected to interstate commerce. It's also a really great example of how important statutory interpretation is. You know, that one word, causing, ended up having a huge impact on the outcome of the case. And I think it's a good reminder for law students that, you know, the devil is in the details when it comes to the law.
Right. One little word can completely change the meaning of a statute and have these huge real-world consequences. It also shows how the law has to adapt to keep up with the times, right? I mean, this case was about physical checks being transported across state lines. But, you know, today, so much of our financial activity happens online instantaneously across borders. So, you know, thinking about how those same principles apply in the digital age is super relevant. So to our law student listeners out there, I'll leave you with this thought. How might Sheridan apply to modern forms of financial fraud that involve the internet? I mean, think about things like cryptocurrency, online banking, you know, all these things that happen across borders in the blink of an eye. How would the concept of causing interstate transportation apply in those cases? It's a really interesting question to consider as you continue your legal studies. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into United States v. Sheridan. We'll see you next time.